Line, Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Tim, we had one really exciting down-to-the-wire nail-biter game, and then we had a total snooze-fest of a game on Sunday and Championship Sunday. Your thoughts on the game of the weekend, the officiating, so on and so forth.
So the dud of the games, that I can't remember a championship game being worse than that game. I mean, maybe there was.
So bad.
But to think that we ended up in a scenario where literally we had an entire quarter where the Niners had a quarterback that couldn't throw the football more than 5 yards. I mean, to me, that was, I think, just shocking that we kind of found ourselves in that situation. And then to get the news that we have now of Brock Purdy's injury, to be honest, I'm just kind of devastated for him. I thought how he played this year, I thought there would be a really good shot that he's their quarterback next year. Now I think with that injury, hey, we don't know, you know, when he will be back. If he does come back, if he'll ever be the same. And then honestly, like what that means for him in San Francisco or just even in the league in general. So that's kind of overarching theme there for the Niners and what that game was like. And then, in the other game, I think the big surprise for me was the way Cincinnati's offensive line dominated against the Buffalo Bills, but then had all kinds of issues against Kansas City on the road. They certainly did not play nearly as well as they played the week prior. And then Patrick Mahomes, like, I don't know what else you can say in terms of, you know, knowing that he was limited, but then to play the way he played, you know, I think just in terms of, like, competitive performance, toughness, all of that stuff, like, to me, I don't know that I've seen a better performance out of somebody kind of with an awareness of what they're dealing with physically in terms of that ankle injury. And then the scramble at the end of the game, all of that. Like, I was glad that we at least got a competitive good one for that second game of championship weekend.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. And to your point, and that was a superhero performance from Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Considering the injury, considering that they traded away his top receiver in Tyreek Hill, and then Patrick Mahomes led them back to the Super Bowl, I don't think it's something that can go ignored. So I don't want to take Patrick Mahomes' performance away from that game. But I did feel like the officiating was very anti-Bengal. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the NFL has an officiating problem?
Yeah, I think the NFL has an officiating problem in that, you know, I think that it's not great, right? So you just look at a couple calls in that game. You know, the reach for the first down and then the ball gets pulled back. Like, that's not forward progress. You know, that's not extending the football over the goal line. So, like, that play there made no sense to me whatsoever. Now, I do think that, you know, when they I guess that sequence where it feels like, hey, you know, they got a fifth down, you know, when you saw the all 22 look, there clearly was an official that was coming out to stop the play. There was a clock management issue by the officiating crew. So, you know, was that anti-Bengals? I think the net result, you know, was bad for the Bengals. I guess I would just say this to you, Caroline, in terms of that. I think when it can be viewed as anti-Cincinnati, especially with, you know, some of the decisions were made after the canceled game, you know, Bengals-Bills that were bad for Cincinnati. I think it ultimately, if you want to make it a, hey, this is rigged kind of conversation, I think you can provide a lot of this corroborating evidence, if you will, to make it be so. Now, I don't think that it's as blatant as that. I think we just have inconsistencies in officiating. I think we see a bad job in officiating, and I think when you want to make it fit that, I think it's very easy to do so. I think you can also look at the hit on Josh Johnson in the other football game. Like, that's not roughing the quarterback. Or think about the fumble or incomplete pass, you know, from Josh Allen versus the Josh Dobbs, hey, that's a fumble play. Like, I just think it's inconsistent. It's bad. And because of that, yes, I would say that I agree with you there is an officiating problem.
Now, Tim, I'm going to take this just a detour right here away from the AFC and NFC championship games. And I want to go to Josh Allen because all we hear about Josh Allen is how great he has been and how great he is and how elite he is. But to me, he's not in that sort of space or air, I believe, that a Patrick Mahomes is in, and even a Joe Burrow at this point. It almost reminiscent to me of a Philip Rivers deal, where when Philip was playing, he had to battle Tom Brady, he had to battle Peyton Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. And now you're sort of seeing that with Josh Allen, where he has to battle in the AFC. He has to battle Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, and he's fourth on that depth chart in regards to, you know, quarterbacks and what they're capable of doing. I just don't – when people talk about Josh Allen, it seems like they give him so much leeway, but he hasn't done anything, you know, that would require me, at least me, to put him in the same breath as a Mahomes or even a Burrow. He gets into these situations in the playoffs, and he always finds something, you know, he always does something that loses the game for his team. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, see, like, I think I would disagree with you, D. Mason. Mm-hmm. I think, and here's why I say that. It's like, look at Patrick Mahomes. He goes to throw the football, and it falls out of his hand, mm-hmm. you know, and he turns it over. And you're like, you know, other guys make that mistake, and it's like, yeah, see, guy chokes. And I think when it comes down to, you know, guys winning and losing these games, we just have, for whatever reason, made it be like it's only about, you know, the quarterback. And it's like, well, look, I mean, how about Chris Jones making a play at the end of the half, you know, to hold Cincinnati to 3 rather than, you know, scoring a touchdown? Or, like, I just think that I think there's good fortune associated with winning and losing these games at these points. I actually believe that there are multiple quarterbacks that are like same level, right? So Burrow, Mahomes, I would put Josh Allen in that level. And I think what ends up separating them is the teams that they're on, like somebody steps up and makes a play. And, you know, like, and when guys do that, like, you know, ultimately what happens, their team wins, and then we say, like, all right, we start building, like, this narrative. Like, I really feel like that's it. Like, mm-hmm. I think that I just – and then I think kind of what can happen if it happens, you know, in a repetitive nature, right? So it's more than just one game or one situation, right? So take Josh Allen, for example. So he has a game against Kansas City last year where, like, they never get the ball back. So is that, like, did Josh Allen fail? Like, no, I don't think he did. Then we get the game, you know, last weekend in Buffalo. And, look, the reality is the Bills' defense had no answer for Cincinnati. Cincinnati dominated them up front. Like, is that Josh Allen? Like, I just don't think that it is. Now, it starts to build a narrative on it, and it also, I think, starts to create doubt on a football team, which I think can be – you know, kind of a hurdle to overcome for the team in general from a culture perspective in the future. But that's why I just wouldn't, like, separate Allen from Mahomes or anything like that.
But isn't that the same thing we did with Philip Rivers? You know, he never won. As great as Philip Rivers was, he would never be compared to Manning. He would definitely never be compared to Tom. Hell, they won't even compare him to Drew Brees, and Drew Brees only won one championship. That's because why? Yep. He couldn't get his team to a Super Bowl. He couldn't get past the AFC Championship game. And it seems like, to me, until Buffalo does something, I think, a lot with their defense and they get a legitimate running game, he's going to be Philip Rivers.
Yeah, no, listen, I think that, but think about what you just said, like, uh-huh. like, what does he need? He needs a defense that can close the game. That's why exactly. They went and got Von Miller. When they didn't have him, they couldn't close games. They need, like, hey, we need to run the ball as well. Like, look, we can talk about Ben Roethlisberger all we want, but, like, listen, they were running the ball with Jerome Bettis. Like, I think back to Roethlisberger's first Super Bowl, like, they took the game out of his hands. It was Antoine Randall on a reverse pass that, mm-hmm. that makes it a you know, like that changes everything. Look, heck, for Peyton Manning, remember? Look, Peyton, like that was the knock on Peyton for a while. Was it was like, but can they do it then? And truthfully,
can't get past the Patriots.
No, and then like if you look at some of the things that happened, it's like, well, look, you got Rex Grossman, whoever, you know, in a Super Bowl, and you know, like that's what happened there. And then look, Drew Brees. Like, look, if Hank Baskett can recover a surprise onside kick that hits him in the chest, like, do they win one? Like, so I just think that, like, I think the guys that are really good get you into the dance. I do. And then obviously there's some other guys that make it because their teams are good and some good fortune and whatever. But then I think a lot of these guys, it's like, you know what, everything else, it's still a dependent position. Mm-hmm. It's one guy on a roster of 53. And is it important? Sure. But look, Malcolm Butler needs to make a great play on an interception. You know, Asante Samuel or David Tyree needs to make an amazing catch on his helmet. Like, I don't know. I think, listen, I love giving guys credit for being amazing at the position. But, oh, man, I think
a lot
so
has to happen.
And I get that.
Too much credit, too much blame.
And I've always said that, Tim. Sometimes a quarterback gets too much praise, and sometimes he gets too much of the blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I am on Josh Allen with it.
Tim Hasselbeck will stick around with us coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Our second segment with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Talking NFL here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mays, 102.5 The Game. All right, so Tim, I'm not saying this because you're a member of the quarterback fraternity, and perhaps this could have extended your career. You could still be there if this rule were intact as the designated third quarterback. But why did they go away from designating three quarterbacks? That should never happen, I don't think. It would be such a simple thing to correct, but what happened in the championship game was sad. Yep. Where you got Christian McCaffrey trying to put the helmet on with the signal in there. He's trying to switch it around. He's handing one helmet to one guy, trying to get it fixed the other way. Then he's trying to throw a pass. That was so pitiful that they had to resort to that. Why not have three quarterbacks designated every NFL game?
Yeah, so there have been a few iterations of it, but like to kind of address what you're talking about, there was a point. So like just go back, 53-man rosters. You can have 46 active on game day. So you got 53 guys on your team. 46 of them can be in uniform and on the sideline and available to enter a football game, which means, you know, you used to have like another 7 guys, you know, that were, you know, on your football team. Maybe they were like the 9th lineman, you know, offensive lineman or something, and they just weren't in uniform. And typically, like, you have guys that are banged up and maybe aren't healthy enough to play. And so, you know, those are some of the players that, you know, aren't in uniform. Well, there used to be a scenario where you could have a quarterback in uniform, and he actually was inactive, but he was available to play,
right?
Because he would be your emergency third. So if you found yourself in a scenario where, you know, starter gets hurt, backup gets knocked out of the game, you did not have to put some, you know, random player who's never practiced at the position out there, and that was, you could then make him active at that point. I have no earthly idea why they got rid of it. I really don't. And, you know, the league has kind of adjusted roster sizes as they've played more games. They roster sizes and practice squads have gotten bigger. You know, there have been scenarios where you can now, you know, have injured reserve designated to return after a certain period of time. Truth be told, I believe that it's a kind of a cost-cutting measure for the league, because, you know, a lot of times teams were ending up just carrying two quarterbacks with the feeling that, hey, look, if we get past our number two quarterback, you know, the chances of us having a third quarterback that's going to help us win the football game are slim anyway. I'd rather have that extra defensive back available because I've got one that's nursing an ankle and I want to have him ready to play. But I think the better scenario would be is to have the third emergency third quarterback, you know, kind of available.
Yes.
And have it be somebody, by the way, that actually plays the position. And
yes,
and I,
not a running back.
Yeah, and so,
or a punter.
Correct. And look, I think that teams could then get creative with it, with you know, a Taysom Hill type player, you know, or a Trace McSorley type of player. And I think that actually would be good for the league as well.
Yes, and you could develop. You could use this as a developmental spot on your roster, which is where Malik Willis should have been.
Yeah, hey, Willis is a perfect example of a guy that could get run out of the league because he's not ready to be a quarterback, okay? But if you said, all right, look, you can have two quarterbacks. You can have Tannehill and Josh Dobbs ready to play, but you also have this third quarterback that you could use in other ways. You know, maybe he's your personal protector on the punt team, and that gives you some ability, you know, to have him as a runner. Maybe you can use him if you're thin at receiver, or you, there's something that you can do. And by the way, it prevents, you know, a horrible scenario where you literally don't really have somebody that, quote unquote, can, like, you know, can play the position or take snaps. That can go in there. So, yeah, I think if you're the league, you mandate it because you can't have what happened. You really shouldn't have something like that happen in a regular season game, much less a conference championship game.
Agreed. We last talked to you, we were hitting the offensive coordinator carousel. It's interesting how quick it can happen with Kellen Moore getting let go one day and then literally 24 to 48 hours later, he has a new job. With the Chargers, they have a pretty talented quarterback. Pretty interesting move. And so there's been no talk, no movement on the Titans opening. Are you hearing anything there?
Yeah, so here's what I'd say on the Kellen Moore thing, and I know that no one would ever admit that this is the case. I mean, I think that's kind of one of these things that was like, I mean, did they happen simultaneously? I mean, like, I guess not trying to be, you know, the skeptical guy in this, but like...
Right, but obviously there was some groundwork laid somewhere.
It was like, hey, here's the deal. Get me out of here, and I've got my landing spot. I mean, that's like, that's the case. That's what happened there. I mean, and truthfully, like, are you firing your offensive coordinator without knowing that that you're going to ultimately end up with Kellen Moore? Like, I think if you really, if you could get phone records, I think you'd see how that went down. And so in regards to, I think I said this to you guys maybe before it became, I don't know, maybe before it was public. Like, look, I think it's Matt Nagy. And I think the only reason that it's not already Matt Nagy is because the Chiefs are still playing. Like, now I don't know that. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I feel has happened. And so I think that's the... Like, to me, if Kansas City weren't still playing, I feel like it would have been done by now.
So you're saying it's no rush because he feels like he could – and they're not rushing him. They don't have to have an interview this week while they have the bye week, per se.
Yeah, and I think it's one of these things where it's like we're not going to go hire someone else because, look, Matt Nagy's not rumored to be getting one of these head coaching jobs that's open. We feel like it's pretty good that it's happening here. And so ultimately, we're just not announcing it now. It's distracting to the Chiefs. Really doesn't matter if we announce it now or we announce it later or we officially decide later. I feel like it's Matt Nagy. So, and like there are obviously other things that need to happen, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe they're interviewing other candidates and it fulfills requirements. Like, I'm not reporting anything. Like, you're saying, like, hey, what's my sense? What's my feel? My feel is that it's Matt Nagy, that it's decided. We'll go through some of these, you know, exercises along the way here. But ultimately, I think he's the offensive coordinator.
Which deal you believe happens first? Derek Carr out of Las Vegas, or Aaron Rodgers out of Green Bay? Or do you think they'll push more so the Aaron Rodgers well into the offseason?
I think they both get pushed a little bit. Now, the roster bonus scenario for Carr, I think essentially – And then I don't know how they get out of it. But basically, a few days after the Super Bowl, next year is guaranteed, I believe, right? And potentially some of, so say 2023 salary is guaranteed, and I think it's $33 million. And I want to say maybe 24 is guaranteed as well at like $7 million. So I believe that you are basically committing to him at a minimum $33 million if he is on your roster come, you know, mid to late February. So my guess is something happens there. Now, can something happen where there's a trade and somebody else pays some of that? Maybe so. But I would guess that kind of forces things where Aaron Rodgers, you know, all of his money kind of comes later. And I think that he's probably going to start to look at places that are better opportunities for him. So I would say that Rodgers happens later.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Last one for you, Tim. Kind of a three-parter. Where is Tom Brady next year? Where is Aaron Rodgers next year? And where is Trey Lance next year?
Oh, wow. This is an essay question, Tim. Are you prepared for this?
I expect a thesis as well, Tim.
So I would say...
What is your hypothesis?
So if I had to... if I'm guessing on all these... All right, so the easiest way for me to do that would be to try to put guys in other places. I would say this. I would put Rodgers and Brady in Vegas and San Francisco. And, you know, I guess what order, if I had to choose, you know, I guess I would put Rodgers in San Francisco and Brady in Las Vegas. And then, you know, I don't think that means Lance has to be somewhere else. So I think Lance could still be in San Fran. So like that would be my first option, but then to put him somewhere else, Carolina, you know, maybe, is where I would put him. But I think that the more likely scenario is that Lance is still in San Francisco, but I would put Brady, in Las Vegas and Aaron in San Francisco.
Essay very well executed. Thank
nice.
You, Tim.
You get A+.
A+.
A+. It's the only A+ I've ever received.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck with us. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right. See you guys.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Coming up next, a little bit of Titans news. Is that going to solve the Titans' problems? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your phone, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.